This is Tom Randolph, and welcome to another edition of the Building the Border podcast. Joining me, as usual, in the studio, my good friend, Tommy Watson. How are you, Tommy?
I'm doing pretty good. I just spent a lovely weekend in the great state of Nebraska watching their spring game.
Is that an oxymoron?
Great weekend. Whoa. Excuse me. The state's motto is the good life.
So. Okay. All right.
Anyways, it was a fun time. Spring games aren't super exciting. Was not really, but they did have a lot of people there, and it's fun to get a little taste of football in the spring.
Yeah, you're back to the atmosphere, enjoying the nice weather that we had this weekend, which I think Lincoln enjoyed as well.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, football's, it's a couple months away. It's about 4 months away still, but it's good to get back in the swing of it. I'm definitely looking forward to heading back up to Lawrence this fall and catching some games that the Lowly Jayhawks will probably lose a lot of. But, yeah, it's great to get back to your old stomping grounds of college, too. That's always
Indeed.
Fun.
It was.
Again, joining us for another week is Brody Johnson. Welcome back, Brody.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me back.
So, pretty solid weekend overall. The Royals continued their winning ways, and that'll start off what we're gonna discuss today. Royals are 7-0.
Yeah, what?
The only remaining undefeated team in baseball. They
suck at Detroit.
Capped off another victory today, winning 12-3 over the Minnesota Twins in the Minnesota Twins opening day game at Target Field. So good to spoil that for the Twins.
The Royals now 3-0 on opening days this season.
Yeah, so not a bad start for the club. And there are some players that are just off to a hot streak. Overall, as a team, third in runs, second in batting average, second in on-base percentage, and second in slugging percentage. Those are pretty good numbers as a team. But there's some individual guys kind of holding us up as well. It's been a team effort, but some guys are standouts. Tommy, who stood out to you thus far for the Royals?
Well, Sal definitely. He's got 3 home runs so far. And, I mean, the team as a whole with all their home runs, because, you've been saying leading up to the season, you've been talking about you're ready for power from the Royals.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of discounting you, and I think I was pretty stupid for saying that. Because, even if this is just a little bit of a hot streak, a little bit of a power streak, I think this is one of the better power streaks they've gone on in many years, the last several years for sure.
Well, they certainly have a lot of power threats on the roster when you look at from top to bottom. You look at Morales. He's shown power at different points in his career, and he has 2 home runs in the season. Perez, we know he can swing the bat. It's just a matter of, when he gets into his groove, and he certainly is in one now. Hosmer, he's got power. Rios has shown power in his career. And Moose has shown an ability to hit the deep ball, both in the playoff run last year and now early on this season. He has 2 home runs to add to the Royals, 9 home run total. Kane had a pretty deep blast to go with those other guys.
Yep.
So those guys have flashed their power, and it's been exciting to see so far. I kind of said early on, I want the slogan to change from "that's what speed do" to "that's what power do," and they've definitely flexed that early on. There are very few Royals actually right now that are batting under 300, at least in the starting lineup, and that is Hosmer, who's at 290, Gordon, who's at he's batting 63 right now in the season, and Infante, who's batting 179. Now, certainly those won't be a trend that continues for this season, but the rest of the roster is, they're just playing phenomenal offensive baseball.
Yeah, I'm not too bothered about the Gordon and Infante thing, because Gordon's coming off that wrist injury, and so far he doesn't actually have a lot of plate appearances.
No.
And so it'll take him a while to adjust and overcome that, so I don't actually see him having a great average for this season.
Yeah.
Infante's the number 9 hitter, so we don't have to expect a lot from him.
Right. And, Gordon struggles. It's only through the first 7 games, but someone has stepped up into his place, stepping into the left field position to spot him some rest. And he's proven to be a really great addition to his ball club, Paulo Orlando, who his first 3 major league hits were all triples. That's pretty impressive.
First player to do that in major league history.
Yeah, and all of his hits thus far to his name are triples. So that's pretty impressive. I think this team has got us really excited. The pitching's been really great. We've got a solid ERA as a team. The bullpen's been outstanding. And it's a scary thought to think that in a month, Luke Hochaver may be rejoining this club as another healthy addition to this murderer's row of bullpen we've got.
Well, the bullpen's been looking great, but they really haven't had to do anything. They have had almost zero pressure. Several of the games so far have just been blowouts,
right.
You know, today included.
Yeah, and I think the Royals put a lot of additional pressure on clubs because of what their bullpen can do. I think that the mindset of, well, if we get to the sixth inning and we haven't generated any runs, but, you know, an opposing team playing the Royals, if we get to the sixth inning and we haven't generated any runs, our chances aren't very good to win a baseball game. And I think that mindset for our opponents is a really positive thing for this Royals club, because they're just swinging the bat freely. They're playing fun baseball. This is a loose bunch, and they're really carrying that success from last postseason into this year. Brody, what has your initial reaction been to this team so far?
I'm loving it. I mean, the defense carried over, maybe got even better with the addition from losing Aoki, and it's really just been impressive to watch.
Yeah, I definitely think Rio's shored up that right field position. Now, a little bit of nervous moment today. Mm-hmm. In the game, they pulled Rios out, worry of a contusion, I believe, on his right arm.
I think he's getting X-rays later tonight.
Yeah,
but nothing looked too serious.
Nothing looked serious. It was more of a precaution to pull him out of the game. And we certainly hope he's healthy. But this team, top to bottom, I think this is a team that's proving the critics wrong, because they were saying, well, you know, these guys, based on their run production from last year, you know, their run production should have only won them 84 games instead of 89. The projection, we're going to win 79 games this year, because they viewed Morales and Rios as drop-offs from their, you know, replacement mm-hmm. positions last year. But they're just proving everybody wrong. Now, I'm not going to jump the gun and say that this is, you know, a playoff-bound team, but they've done nothing in the last seven games to prove me otherwise. And I think it's just going to be – this is a great start to an outstanding season. And I think they're doing something that is contrary to what is – been the MO of the Royals in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We've been plagued by poor starts this season. We've been plagued by poor April run, poor records in April, poor records in May, and then we kind of pick it up after the All-Star break. Now we're getting out and we're sending a message early, and we're setting the tone. And if you really look at the numbers and you look at our win percentage at the end of the All-Star break, or, you know, coming after the All-Star break last year, we've been the best team in baseball essentially since last July.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't lost to an American League team since, you know, last October.
Yeah, which is impressive.
September.
So they're just cleaning through. They're just sweeping through the American League right now, and they're better than last year. I mean, I know a lot of people were saying, you know, maybe replacing Butler with Morales isn't an upgrade. Well, Kendrys Morales has proved otherwise. Now, Billy Butler is having a fantastic start to the season with the A's. We won't discredit that, and we're definitely excited to see him come back to Kansas City on Friday as we head out to the ballpark to watch the Royals in their first home series since the home opening series. But yeah, I don't see any flaws in this roster, and if anything, the only flaws are that we've got two guys that are, you know, slumping a little bit right now, but they're both outstanding defensive players. Both are coming off of injuries, so there's not too big of a point of concern. Tommy, is there anything that concerns you, you know, thus far, besides, you know, maybe a little bit of lack of production from those two guys?
I've been a little concerned with Yordano Ventura, not because of his actual pitching ability, but just the fact that he's left the last two games with cramps. You
mm-hmm.
know, first he had the hand cramp on opening day, and then yesterday he had a calf cramp. And I don't know if – from what I've heard, they don't think they're, you know, linked. They don't think it's a lingering problem of any kind. But, you know, it makes you wonder if he's going to be a high risk of cramps, you know, if he's cruising along and then all of a sudden he's got to leave the game
yeah.
because, you know, he can't pitch anymore.
You know, I think the concern there is certainly valid. You never want to see your ace going down, you know, twice early in the season and having to leave in their first two starts. I think, you know, he's a young guy. You know, he's in his early 20s. He's one of these guys that probably, you know, my guess is, based on my diet as an early 20-something, it's probably not outstanding. You know, the doctors tell you need to drink more water, you need to take care of yourself better. And Duffy kind of realized this early on in his career, that it was about taking care of your body. It was about, you know, hydrating to a certain level, eating the right things. And I think that maybe the training staff is going to look at this and say, well, maybe there's things that we can do from a nutrition standpoint that can improve Yordano's health. So maybe, you know, I saw an article today, they're going to try and increase his water intake before his starts, get him properly hydrated, maybe change his diet, his pregame meals, because that can definitely have an effect on the way you pitch in your performance. So I think that whatever issues are plaguing him right now from a diet and hydration standpoint, I think those are what's plaguing him on the field. I don't think it's anything, you know, mechanics wise. You know, we've expressed before that we have concerns over the way he pitches, but I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think maybe it's just getting him back into that stamina of pitching 6-7 innings per start. He's got to get back into that groove again. He probably hasn't pitched this much or this intense since, you know, since November when he was pitching in game 2 and game 6 of the World Series. So we'll see. Brody, what about you? Are you at all concerned with the issues that have been playing Ace so far?
Not too much. It's just, as you said, kind of routine and probably getting back into the swing of things. But I think really my main concern for the Royals is the back end of the starting rotation.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
we have the length for long inning relievers, but it's how well will our starters carry it if we don't have the run production of today.
You want to have a ball club where every couple of games you can throw it to your bullpen then have them go deep. But you don't want to have to be don't want it to be a marked characteristic of your ball club. You know, I think the concern was that Vargas and Guthrie, rightfully so, we had some concerns. They're getting up there in age. You know, they've had some poor starts, you know, mixed in their careers as Royals. Guthrie didn't have a great outing against the Angels on, was it Friday and Saturday? Mm-hmm. Friday or Saturday. It wasn't outstanding. I think he gave up 4 runs in about 5 innings. So you'd obviously like to see more out of him and a better, solid back into the rotation. But I think that's something that we can maybe figure out with some, you know, midsummer call-ups, moving Hochaver maybe into a starting role because that bullpen is so solid.
It's a good problem to have because we don't really – it's not like we don't have faith in our starters. It's just they are the weakest link in a very strong chain.
And, you know, they're kind of – you never know which version of Guthrie or Vargas you're going to get, you know, day in, day out. It may be an instance where Vargas struggles to get out of the first 2 innings. We hope that doesn't happen this season, but we know it's a possibility. It's a possibility of any starter to come into that game. But I think the risk is higher with those two guys because of their age and because of how many innings they've pitched. It's just more of an area of concern. But – we can say all the things we're concerned about, but until we lose, I'm going to be riding this hot streak. I think it's going to be catastrophic when we do lose. I don't think people are going to know how to respond. But they've flexed a lot of power, a lot of run-scoring ability so far this year, and I think this is a sign of just great things to come. And I think it's a testament to the patience and the progress that this organization has made from a front office standpoint. I think Dayton Moore is a genius. You know, you can say he hasn't have a long enough track record to prove it, but when he got hired back in the mid-2000s, he said, look, trust the system, trust the way this is going to work. There might be some grueling years ahead, but we are developing a quality, solid ball club, and the mentality with the Glass family has changed as well. We're starting to spend a lot of money. We're starting to be more respectable in terms of our payroll, so I'm getting excited. I think this is kind of the new era of Royals baseball, if you will, where we will become one of the marquee franchises in the major leagues. And I think we're building a culture more than anything. We're building a winning tradition. We're building a culture where guys are wanting to play in Kansas City, which will also make the payroll maybe a little bit lighter if guys actually want to come and play for this team.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting with Dayton Moore right now. And this thought just came to me. For the first time in our lives, we may be entering an era of Royals baseball that's not about rebuilding.
No,
it's reloading in between seasons or just keeping the same team because I think we have, you know, our farm system is not what it was several years ago, but that's just because we had stockpiled so many first-round picks.
Well, we've traded away so many of them to bring in what we have now.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, now we have a decent amount of talent in the minors, great talent at the major league level, and then Dayton Moore just knows how to run a team. You know, he knows that the currency of baseball is relief pitchers and just pitchers in general because I think he does a great job of putting together bullpens. If you think about it, like 5 years ago, could you really name that's kind of a silly thing to say. Could you name our bullpen now? But, I mean, like 5 years ago, none of our guys in our bullpen right now who are known throughout the league were anything. Holland was just a setup guy. Wade Davis was a struggling pitcher in Tampa. Pitcher in Tampa,
yeah, and
say.
Jason Fraser was a journeyman and never really stuck on a ball on a major league ball club. We've got Chris Young, who, you know, has shown that he's a decent pitcher in San Diego before, but we brought him in. We've got a lot of guys. They're going to be really integral pieces moving forward. You know, Frazier's getting up there in age, so probably he won't be around much longer. But you've got guys that I think are going to make a high impact for a while.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether or not we can afford to keep them around. And I think where there's a will, there's a way. And I think, you know, this club's moving in the right direction. So I think that wraps it up for all we have to say on the Royals this week. I'm going to throw over to Brody for a second. Brody's going to recap the exciting game that Sporting Kansas City had over the weekend. Brody, why don't you tell us about that?
Pretty good lead-in on that for a 0-0 draw, or nil-nil draw.
Yeah.
Between Real Salt Lake and
Sporting Kansas City. You can say 0-0.
you're allowed to say nothing.
It was very entertaining in the fact that it was a very big defensive matchup. There were five yellow cards given out, four for Real Salt Lake, and it was a very intense because a lot of the players off the field just don't like each other.
Yeah.
There was a Real Salt Lake player that called Beasley's throw-ins, which are going probably 25 yards into the field. Great throw-ins. Disgusting pieces of trash. I mean, they're garbage. Yeah. He's calling them garbage, which obviously inflames the Sporting KC players to maybe dig their elbows
retaliate a little bit more.
And so it showed up on the field of not a whole lot of shots. I think one shot on target.
One shot on goal for both teams, I think, was a stat that I saw.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, though. I'm going to go back to what you said previously. Now, this is the United States. This is an English-speaking country. Do we call them Real Salt Lake, or are they Real Salt Lake? Because I think Real is kind of reserved for the Spanish-speaking ball clubs.
I mean,
is that correct, Brody? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think their name is Real Salt Lake.
It's spelled Real Salt Lake, but anyone who pronounces it is going to say Real.
Why?
I actually don't know the reasoning behind it.
I don't think it's pronounced
that
way.
No, I'm not good with the English language.
I know, but I don't think... I'm just going to go ahead and posit that it's not called... No one refers to it as Real Salt Lake.
I guess Real Salt Lake, but okay. It doesn't sound as...
I've heard a lot of people call them RSL.
RSL.
Which is an easier way to call them. And I tried watching the game with Brody on
Saturday. We ended up switching over to
it was
Royals
the most brutal
thing. How did you not start with the Royals game?
Well, the Royals started in the middle, and thank God we changed it. But on commercial breaks, I just sit and watch this just garbage soccer match. And, you know, I've watched enough soccer recently to understand when there's big plays, when there's a potential at a scoring possession for the attacking club. But that game just didn't have any intrigue for me at all. And I know Real Salt Lake, now you got me saying
that.
I know that RSL is one of the premier clubs in the MLS, and it's a rivalry, but it just didn't do it for me. I've been to games, and I've watched games for Sporting Kansas City on television before that are really exciting, really entertaining. This one was a dud. It was back and forth. There wasn't very good ball control. And I don't know what I'm saying here, really. But the possession...
I mean, for the part that we watched, it really was just kind of...
The possession didn't seem...
Very early on, Kansas City had a lot of possession, but no way to finish. Really.
Yeah, there was no... The passing accuracy was off. I don't know. Most of my soccer knowledge comes from playing FIFA. But overall, I wasn't entertained, and I think most Kansas City fans out of that game that night weren't as well.
And kind of on a sadder note, one of our key defenders, Opara, came out today that he tore his Achilles tendon.
Yeah, that's a tough injury to come back from. That's a career-altering injury, especially as a soccer player. So that's tough. And it's not. I mean, Sporting Kansas City is not off to a bad start this year, but that's definitely going to hurt them moving forward as we look towards the heat of the season as we get into May and June.
Mm-hmm.
We got to make our way out to Sporting Park. As much as I knock soccer for somehow being boring, or football, as Brody would say.
Well, I said soccer.
For
football,
being
football's
football.
So,
we got to get out to a game eventually. But, again, tough draw for Sporting Kansas City on Saturday night.
On better news, though, the USA team... called up Matt Beasler, local kid,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be playing Mexico.
Yeah, in a friendly, correct?
Yeah,
in a friendly this week. I'm excited for that game. I'm never torn by my allegiance in that game, but it's always fun to see Mexico play. You know, I'm of Mexican heritage, so it's always fun to see the national team play. And when they are playing the United States, I usually cheer for the Mexicans. But enough about soccer, because we want to keep any listeners that are still listening. And moving on into our sports pop culture melding corner of the week, we are going to start a little series where we talk about our favorite sports movies of all time, and we'll categorize them by the best in every single sport.
Yeah, I think that makes it easier to do.
And then at the end, we will decide the best sports movie in each individual sport, This will be an ongoing series. And at the end of that, we will have them all in a we'll cover all of the winners in each sporting category in a special, which will air on a Thursday or a Wednesday night. We'll just talk about those movies, and we'll kind of have a bracket. So we decided, since we are in the full swing of the opening of the baseball season, we're going to talk the best baseball movies of all time. And Tommy, I think you kind of had a little short list of your movies that you think should be included in the bunch, and we'll kind of talk about them each individually.
So I had five right off the top of my head, and feel free to add some if you want, guys. Right now I got Field of Dreams, Sandlot, A League of Their Own, Bull Durham, and Major League.
Yeah, that's a solid first list. I think to that list I'd probably add Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year, that's a good one.
The Rookie with Dennis Quaid.
The Natural.
The Natural with Robert Redford.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have A League of Their Own on there? I'm trying to think of other movies that are big marquee baseball movies.
Got a few more, maybe Moneyball and Bad News Bears.
Yeah,
the original one.
Yeah, the original Bad News Bears, not the.
Billy Bob Thornton one sucked.
No, that one did suck. There's 42, the Jackie Robinson story, and 8 Men Out, which is kind of an unknown one. It's about Shoeless Joe Jackson and the rigged World Series.
I feel bad. I haven't actually seen that one.
It's it's okay. It's kind of a slow moving movie. Charlie Sheen, I think, plays Shoeless Joe Jackson, if I remember it correctly. I think I watched it back in high school, but
Buck Weaver.
But John Cusack plays Buck Weaver. Charlie Sheen plays some other character, and then D.B. Sweeney plays Shoeless Joe Jackson, and he has had a pretty illustrious career of big marquee movies like Dinosaur and Taken 2, The Cutting Edge, Fire in the Sky, and I don't think I've seen most of those movies.
So this is what you get when we're looking at Google while we're doing
this. Yeah, exactly. And then I'll add one more to that list, and I think it gets overlooked, but it's a big part of my childhood was Angels in the Outfield.
Ooh, yeah, how did we leave that one off?
And we're looking at this list, and certainly there are ones that we would have to highlight. I think The Sandlot is probably my shoe-in favorite for the winning, but I won't get into it as far. But my pick for the best baseball movie of all time would have to be The Sandlot. Tommy, what would yours go based on the list we just put together?
You know, because there are several on here that are like, they're movies that anytime it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch Field of Dreams, Sandlot, League of Their Own. And I definitely think Sandlot's up there, because I think for like kids, like 12 and under, high school and under, like that's the movie. That's the baseball movie. My personal favorite on this list right now is Field of Dreams.
Okay, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think, so it stars Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones. And I think Kevin Costner, I think his favorite sport is baseball, because he's in several baseball movies. Right. And I think this movie is just one of his love stories to baseball.
Yeah.
Make it sound kind of weird that way. But, it's got a lot of good things going for it. It brings in, the Chicago Black Sox, brings in his relationship with his father, several family type issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie all around. Highly recommend.
It's a great film. My defense of Sandlot is, it is in many ways a comedy, but it is a comedy. But it's also a coming of age tale, and I think it showed a portion of American culture that is very idyllic in the minds of a lot of people today.
Yeah.
It showed California during that time period. Which I believe is the 1960s. Well, it was late 1950s when Sandlot's supposed to take place, because they say they lost Bertram Grover Weeks to the 60s.
Yeah.
But there's a very diverse cast of characters in there. You've got Benny the Jet Rodriguez. You've got Michael Squints Palidoris. You've got Scotty Smalls. There's a lot of really great characters in this movie. And it shows, what baseball meant to kids growing up. It shows what being a part of a group and a part of a thing that is your own. They say, baseball was their thing, and they were good at it. They played baseball. I mean, they're really a ragtag group of guys. And it reminds me a lot of, my childhood growing up, playing, baseball out on the street, or at least playing wiffle ball and playing catch out on 70th Street. And a lot of things we did growing up. And I think it just shows how it kind of relates the, how you grow up with baseball, how you grow up with a sport. You see Dennis Leary's character, who plays Scotty Smalls' stepfather, and his relationship to the game. Then you see James Earl Jones, whose fictional character played baseball with Babe Ruth and just that the way that people grow up with a game. And, you know, I'm definitely, like, you know, getting up on my soapbox here about The Sandlot because I definitely love it for its comedy and everything in it. But it's also a movie just about life and growing up as a kid. And I can always go back to that movie and appreciate the way they framed that period of time in history.
So, you know, to speak to your point about The Sandlot, I would say my favorite scene from any of these movies is the scene in The Sandlot, the 4th of July scene, where they go out and they play and at night, because it's the only time of the year they can play at night because of the fireworks are lighting up the sky.
Yeah.
And then in the background, you have America the Beautiful, sung by Ray Charles, and it's just awesome to watch.
Yeah, it gives you chills, you know, down your spine. It starts off with Ham, you know, running through the block party, trying to grab as much food as he can. But then it cuts to these guys, and they're playing baseball, and Benny hits that home run, and everyone just turns and starts watching it. And you've got America the Beautiful and the sweet sound of Ray Charles playing. They're all staring up at the sky. And I think for that one moment, you were like, it brings you back to maybe not that specific moment in your childhood, but a significant moment in your childhood where you were free and baseball or whatever sport it was life. And that was all that mattered to you at that moment. And so, you know, I laugh hysterically at the Wendy Peppercorn scenes, and I laugh hysterically at the scenes out in front of the general store. And I laugh. My favorite scene might be the scene where they do the big red chewing tobacco, and they all throw up while tequila plays in the background. I mean, there's just so many funny moments in that movie. But what shouldn't be overshadowed is the overall overarching message, which is youth and friendship and dreams, which is really what that movie's about. And it comes together when you see Smalls in the play-by-play booth calling a Los Angeles Dodgers game with Benny the Jet Rodriguez coming in as a pinch runner and stealing home plate. And it just kind of all comes full circle. And that's why it's a special movie for me. But we haven't given Brody a chance to say his favorite baseball movie yet.
Doesn't matter. Just kidding.
But based on this list, Brody, what would you pick as your favorite baseball movie, the best baseball movie?
Well, if you were to ask my younger self, it would have had to have been Rookie of the Year because I grew up being a Cubs fan because of this movie. Went to several Cubs games as a birthday present and really got hooked on becoming a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
More because of this movie than anything else.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just a great kind of kid fantasy of playing in the major leagues, being a star, and winning the World Series and all that. But I'd say the best movie is Bull Durham.
Okay.
Just because it is much more of an adult serious drama with some comedic parts in there. But also tells the story of kind of the minor league droll that it is.
Okay. Yeah, and, you know, there are things I like about Bull Durham. I haven't seen it, you know, enough times to really form, like, an overall, like, it's not one of my favorite sports movies of all time, but I've seen it enough. It's much more an adult film, so I didn't really have it growing up, so I never really related to it as a kid. And I think the movies that really resonate with me when it comes from a sports movie perspective are the movies that I watched growing up. When you think, I'm getting away from baseball for a little bit, but the movies that I really loved growing up were, like, you know, Remember the Titans, Rudy, Hoosiers. Movies that were around when we were kids that I could watch as a kid. Bull Durham's not really a kid's movie. It's not a movie you're gonna sit down with your, you know, 7 or 8 year old son and say, "Son, watch this.
I actually have a good story about that because my mom used to tell me how great of a movie Bull Durham was.
Right.
And for anyone who's seen that movie, it starts with a pretty raunchy sex scene
in
the locker room.
Yeah.
And so my mom turns on the movie. She bought it for us so we could watch it. And that scene starts up, and she's just mortified.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm only 12, 13 years old. I'm not used to that kind of stuff. And I think she paused the movie and, like, had to fast-forward skip scene and just sat there red-faced for the next 30 minutes.
It could have been much worse than the time we were watching Good Luck Chuck, the unrated version, and your parents came home. That was pretty bad, too.
Yeah, that was embarrassing, guys.
It was a montage.
It was a long montage.
Long montage. I thought that was never going to end. But back to the baseball movies. So we have to pick one, unfortunately. So I would probably say, for the sake of its adult content, that I would probably leave Bull Durham not off the list because it's a great movie. But I think the best sports movie in any category should be one that can be appreciated by anybody from, like, the age of 11 to, like, you know, however old they are. So for that reason, I would say Bull Durham.
Probably off the list.
So it's between Field of Dreams and Sandlot. Now I'm going to go obviously go with my pick. I'm going to go with Sandlot as the greatest baseball movie of all time. Tommy, between Field of Dreams and Sandlot, what would you say?
You know, that's really tough because my personal favorite is Field of Dreams. I think it's at a certain level, it's a personal choice because I love Field of Dreams. I love how he like goes out and he's on this quest to build the field and attract Joe Jackson, or what he thinks he's attracting Joe Jackson to come to the field.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, and he's meeting, turns out he's meeting former players, or like, well, he picks up the kid on the side of the road that turns out to be kind of a ghost almost of a guy who loved playing baseball but gave it up to be a doctor for a town and stuff like that. And I, you know, I don't know what the draw is to me on that one, but I just love that one so much. But I would definitely not fight you on Sandlot being the best baseball movie.
All right.
Just because you knocked off Bull Durham, I'm going to have to go Field of Dreams.
Okay. So I think the votes are 2-1, man.
It's kind of weird. I conceded my vote.
Field of Dreams advances as the greatest baseball movie of all time. I will denote that with an asterisk that the greatest baseball movie of all time is Sandlot, and I was hoping that would be in contention for the final. But we will have a few finalists that were strongly considered for the best in their category that we put in as kind of write-in votes. So the Sandlot might make it, but there are some pretty strong movies in the categories of football, basketball, even golf. That could contend, and we'll have a miscellaneous sports category because I'm worried we're not going to have enough for boxing or for auto racing and those types of movies. Although Days of Thunder, and it just came to mind.
Rush is a good one too.
Rush is a good one.
Seen that one.
But we'll cover our next sport next time we have some free time in a show to do it. We have kind of a down week this week, so not a whole lot to talk about in the wide world of sports. We did, however, forget to cover Jordan Spieth's historic run at the Masters. So let's just talk about that a little bit. Jordan Spieth, 21-year-old from Dallas, Texas, played for a year at the University of Texas, becomes a pro. Last year, almost wins, you know, comes close to winning the Masters, gets beat out by Bubba Watson. This year, comes in, sets a course record at the age of 21.
Unbelievable.
It was a fantastic performance by a kid who's 2 years younger than us. And he showed complete composure. Now, he did only shoot a 2-under for the last day, but he didn't need to do any better.
I mean, he was a four-hole lead at that point.
He didn't need to do any better. And he beat an historically great field at the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just looking at the history, this has been one of the better, you know, leaderboards that they've had, you know, in the last couple of years. And, you know, guys that are known to be great golfers were at the top of their game. I mean, Tiger played exceptionally well considering he was coming back from injury his first tournament. Mickelson played exceptionally well. Rory finished 12-under to finish fourth of the tournament. You know, you had a lot of guys, a lot of talented golfers kind of chomping at his heels.
Yeah.
And he just held his composure the entire you know, weekend. He's just destroyed the records, and he won his first major title at the Masters. That's pretty special, and especially you know, to be a guy who's 21 years old. At 21, I was concerned about making it to class, having good grades, and you know, getting drunk on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, that's your priorities. He's out there making millions of dollars, winning the Masters, and you know, by all accounts, we've never heard anything negative about him. He's, you know, everybody says he's a great kid. The moment when he wins, he's on, you know, the 18th hole, 18th green with his family, accepting that jacket. And, you know, it's a feel-good story.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's an American winning, which is always good to see. But two, it's, you know, you can tell this kid has put in a lot of hard work. He's the second younger youngest player to win at Augusta, just behind Woods when he won in 1997. And he's also just the fifth person to ever lead the Masters from start to finish. That's amazing. I mean, that's
the composure of a 21-year-old, too,
yeah.
On top,
you know,
of all that.
I thought that was the irony of the part that you were talking about. It was such a good overall performance by so many golfers. And honestly, it wasn't – I mean, it was kind of close, but he never was behind. It was just always people chasing him, and I don't think his lead was ever really in doubt.
No. And you know, it's just incredible. It was incredible watching him, and you're thinking in your mind, you're like, there's no way he can maintain this. Even the first day, you're like, this is incredible. There's no way he can maintain this level of play for 4 days through, you know, four rounds of the tournament.
To go in the day, and have to think about what shots you messed up.
Yeah.
How are you going to correct it and come out and do even better the next time?
Yeah, and it was incredible. And, you know, it's just really cool. I can't say much more about it. You know, I'm sure it's been an emotional week for him. You know, he's got to go out in a few weeks again and, you know, play in another major, you know, play in another tournament coming up soon. I'm not sure what tournament he's going to appear in next, but, you know, I was just really impressed. And I think, you know, he's one of the most bankable athletes in American sports right now. You know, I'd be hard pressed to find five athletes in American sports who you could say, well, that guy's, you know, you can take it to the bank on that guy. I think he's going to see a lot more sponsorship rolling in his way couple of years. And, you know, he's already been responsible with his money. You know, some of his first major winnings, or not major winnings, but tournament winnings went towards a trust. He's already established a charity trust, you know, in his name that, you know, goes towards, you know, helping other people. So I'm excited. He's definitely somebody that's easy to root for. He's not a hostile athlete. He doesn't, you know, make a fool of himself out on the course like sometimes Tiger Woods does. I think he lets his anger get the best of him. But, yeah, I was just excited to see him win. And we just hope nothing but the best for Jordan Spieth moving forward in his career. So that will do it for us today on the Built on the Border podcast. We'll be coming at you guys again in 2 weeks with our Kansas City draft special. We'll have our regular show next week. We'll be covering everything that's going on, hopefully with some good news about the Royals. We'll be hopefully talking some maybe Chiefs moves they made during the week. And we'll probably do our picks for the best basketball movie of all time next week. But again, 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing our draft special for the Chiefs. We'll be going through a round-by-round analysis of where the Chiefs need to address certain needs. And we're looking forward to that, and hopefully you guys will too. So we're going to leave you guys with another new song we've been listening to as we exit the show tonight. And that song this week is Silhouettes by Colony House. We hope you guys enjoy, and have a great week. We'll see you next Monday. Peace. So come on.